one that almost everyone has heard or has some idea of what it's about. The son who takes advantage of his father to get his inheritance early, squanders it all, and comes home again expecting to be turned away, only to be welcomed back with open arms. That's it, right? That's the story. But like many of those Bible stories that are so familiar that they've become just part of our cultural background, sort of white noise, this story too is so much more complex and its characters more nuanced than we first saw. The word prodigal actually means recklessly extravagant. A person who is described as prodigal is someone who has spent everything. The word prodigal does define the son, but this is also the story of the prodigal father, a parent who is so crazy in love with his ne'er-do-well child that he gives his estate away to this child once and then spends it all over again when the child comes home.
This is a retelling of Jesus Christ's story contained in the 15th chapter of Luke's Gospel. Here was a man who had two sons. The story began, the younger son asked for the money, really, that he gave him his share of the inheritance. Now, this was a sign of deep disrespect. In a way, the son was saying that he wanted his father's things, but it's not a relationship with his father. Give me what is mine, he said. And the father surprisingly did what his son asked of him. He must have left the pain of a child rejecting his love and also dishonor. It was a disgrace to divide up his property while he was still alive. The younger son took everything he got and wasted it with an out-of-control lifestyle. Not until he was completely desperate, down in the mud, eating the same thing as the pig who remembered me, where a thorough, disgusting animal to the Jews. Only then did he came to his senses and devised a plan, return home. When he got there, he fully expected that he would be treated like a servant at best, which is more than their deserve. But instead, as soon as this son came within sight of his father home, His father saw him, and he runs towards his son. He picks up his robe and bears his legs into quiet and undignified manner so that he can get there as fast as he can to hold onto his son who had been lost and who now has come home. And then the father puts aside all the things that he might have said and instead pulls out all the stops on his welcome home project. The best food, the best clothing, the most honored friends are brought out. A fears of an extravagant welcome as prepared. But the older son and older brother of the son who came home is much more restrained. He refused to go to the party. He stays outside. He is very sure about how wrong his younger brother's actions were. He should be held accountable, not welcomed back like a hero. He resent his father open heart, heartless, his willingness to spend money on a son who had done nothing to earn his affection. Look, the older son said to the father, all these years I've been a good son. I've done what I was asked and what I was supposed to, and not once have you thrown me a party for being such a good person. Now, you are honoring him. The general and patient, the generous and patient father assures that older brother and good son of his love and appreciation, he reminds his older son that everything the father has belonged to him. It was always belonging to him. But the older son cannot come into share into joy of his day. In the end, it is not the younger son who is lost. It is the son who has never left home. This is the word of the Lord. Thank you.
Will you pray with me? May the words of my mouth and the meditations of all of our hearts and the way we live our lives please you. O God, our strength and our Redeemer. Amen. That story of the prodigal son is familiar to almost everybody, even if you have never been a church person. It's become part of our literary culture. The story has a good ending for the son who insulted his father, ran away, and ruined his life before he found himself and returned home, where he finds that he has been loved all along. But if you read or tell this story all the way to its end, as Musu just did, all the way to the part where the older brother refuses to come into the party, no matter how hard his father tries to convince him, then you know that this was not meant to be a feel-good, heartwarming story about families who forgive each other. Jesus told this story for a much more startling point. He was redefining what it means to be lost. This story was intended to shatter our categories of who is lost and who is found, who is needy and who is just fine, thank you, and what being good says about what's in your heart. The context of this passage in Luke's gospel makes it clear that when Jesus told this story, there were two groups of people listening: the recognizable sinners on one hand, and the Pharisees and religion teachers on the other. One of those groups looked a lot like the damnable younger son, and the other looks more like the respectable older brother. This time, just like in most of Jesus' stories, it's the outcast in the picture who connects with God, and the respectable person who walks away without getting the point. The two brothers remind us that everyone is searching for happiness and fulfillment. Some people search for it by following their own hell-bent path for whatever it is they are looking for. Like the younger son, they are going to live hard until they figure out right and wrong for themselves. They don't care much about convention, the rules you're supposed to live by. They step all over other people's standards and expectations as they head for the door leading out. Other people need and seek the same happiness, but by a completely different route. They don't set off any for the people around them. They work hard to do the right thing. They stay close to home and they follow the rules. Neither one of these two routes automatically leads to fulfillment and celebration, which is symbolized in this story by the big party that the father throws at the end. Either way, you can be lost. From either place, you can be found. The younger sons among us, those of us whose wrongdoing and rebellion is clear-cut and visible, those younger sons can get to a point where it's obvious that life is not working. Things get broken. Jobs, marriages, finances. For older brothers, it's sometimes harder to see. We older brothers, who often show up as church people, can get just as far away from the source of life-giving joy. Ironically, It's our determination to be good, to avoid wrongdoing, to do what's right, that keeps us locked in a space full of should and can't and disappointment. The rest of the world is conducting itself. For both these kinds of people, the ones whose shame makes it hard to come home, and the ones who have stayed close in a cell of their own making, as long as we believe that we have to make it on our own, we are missing out on a whole banquet of love and forgiveness and grace. In this story, dancing and delight happen in the Father's house. Both sons are invited, but both sons have to get over themselves first. Give in to the truth that the path they chose isn't working very well. The only requirement for receiving the forgiving, healing, life-giving grace of God, for entering the joyful feast in this story, is to know you need it. And that, it seems to me, is the powerful insight of 12-step programs. The entry into Alcoholics Anonymous and other programs like it, programs that deal with many forms of addiction, begins with an acknowledgement by every participant that life is out of control. An admission that the life you hope for requires something that you haven't been able to find or create for yourself in any other way. An alcoholic who is ready for recovery knows that she has let her family down in dramatic and disruptive ways. An eater who is ready for help has to admit that he has tried every diet and cannot find enough self-control to succeed on his own. Each of them knows that they are locked in a prison of destructive patterns. Finally, only after everything else has been exhausted, they know they must look to a higher power outside themselves if they are ever going to break free. For a long time now, this branch, our branch of the Christian tradition, has not talked much about sin. We saw that beating people with moral sticks to convince them of their need for forgiveness didn't actually lead them to the loving God we want them to know. This is a good and a truthful change, I think. I don't believe that the Christian story begins with the pronouncement of God's judgment of us as unworthy creatures. But maybe we have lost along the way an ability to name truthfully who we are, broken in some fundamental way, that what we need and what faith offers is something more than a few suggestions for how to upgrade the quality of an already just fine life. The truth is, we are all stuck in some way, addicted to something that keeps us from living full, freely chosen lives. If it's not a chemical substance, then it's something else. Recognition, control, achievement, a particular self-image, an unhealthy relationship. Sometimes my life feels sort of like that younger brother's. Bad habits and self-indulgent excess. Sometimes I think I'm more like the older brother, stuck inside the bars of my own rigid expectations about how I and everyone else in the world should behave. Either way, I cannot manufacture for myself the joy and deep fulfillment and spontaneous gratitude that I want to live in. I can't. I have tried. My name is Kathy, and I'm addicted to a whole bunch of things that keep me from loving God and loving the people that I desperately want to love well. I long for this church to be a place where we can authentically acknowledge to one another that on our own, we haven't been able to make our lives work very well. To recognize that what we need ultimately is not to muscle ourselves into self-improvement, but to allow ourselves to be changed. That's where the 12 steps start. It's where Christianity starts too, but somehow over the years, the language of the church has gotten hard to understand. Its words have gotten too holy or too mystified or so obscure or overused that we can no longer hear what they mean. So for these weeks of summer, we're going to one that may be more natural to our everyday ears. We're going to talk in the language of 12 steps, the path to freedom that Alcoholics Anonymous and Narcotics Anonymous and Al-Anon members talk about. I think you will hear the same wisdom that you may have heard in church in sometimes different words. We are all lost. We all long for home. To be seen for exactly who we are, and even so, with all our failings on the table, to be invited personally into a life that feels like dancing and delight. So whichever of those brothers in Jesus' story you identify with, wherever you have been up until now, if you're ready to say, this isn't really working, then come and lay it on the table. Come in. The prodigal God is waiting for you. The God who is always ready to welcome a lost child home. Not with judgment or even skepticism about your motives, but with wild, reckless extravagance. With love. Amen.